It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 32 degrees with a few clouds. Out at the airport, they are showing 85% humidity, southerly winds at 3 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. They are stubbornly calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day. It looks a bit closer to mostly cloudy right now here on Signal Hill. High near 33 today. Calm winds. And a 40% chance of snow after midnight tonight, with mostly cloudy skies overnight and a low of 31. Light and variable winds will turn to the northeast to 10 after midnight. And a chance of snow tomorrow until 9 a.m., then a chance of rain after that. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 39 and northwest winds to 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, ABL Space Systems RS-1 rocket experienced an anomaly yesterday during an attempted launch. That story and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Air travelers are scrambling to reschedule flights that were among the nearly 9,000 delayed or canceled this morning when departing U.S. flights were grounded. The Federal Aviation Administration ordered a ground stop while crews worked to fix a computer safety system that's used to flag potential hazards before takeoff. Tim Campbell, who advises aviation industry executives, explains why the FAA took the rare step of halting flights nationwide.
The reason why the FAA called the ground stop was because these NOTAMs are basically the best information possible about the airfield and the surrounding area. So if taxiways are closed or runways are temporarily closed or closed for construction or any other restrictions that may be in place, the pilots and dispatchers who work hand in hand throughout the flight need to be aware of that.
Campbell's been quoted saying that so much of the FAA systems are old mainframe systems that are generally reliable but are out of date. The government still has not said what caused the outage, but officials say there are no signs it was the result of a cyber attack. Calls are mounting that Russian cyber attacks in Ukraine be officially designated war crimes. NPR's Jenna McLaughlin has more.
Almost a year after Russia invaded Ukraine, the flashy so-called cyber war many experts expected hasn't exactly come to pass. But that doesn't mean digital destruction hasn't been a major part of Russia's strategy. Human rights lawyers from UC Berkeley sent a formal request to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, urging it to consider Russian cyber attacks as war crimes, particularly those that caused blackouts in Kyiv before the war. One of Ukraine's top cyber officials, Viktor Zhura, agrees. He cited a combined digital and shelling attack on a thermal power plant as an example of a coordinated assault against civilians. Jenna McLaughlin, NPR News.
Republican officials in New York demand that Congressman George Santos resign and give up the House seat he won last month on Long Island. Santos faces controversy over lies he told about his history before the election and for alleged campaign finance violations. Here's NPR's Brian Mann.
During an emotional news conference, Republican officials lined up to condemn Santos as a pathological liar for inventing a history of working for Wall Street banks and claiming falsely his family escaped the Holocaust, among other deceptions. Republican Congressman Anthony D'Esposito called for Santos to step down, as did Joseph Cairo Jr., the influential head of Nassau County's Republican Committee.
As I said, he's disgraced the House of Representatives. I am calling for his immediate resignation.
Asked by reporters whether he will heed calls to step down, Santos answered, "I will not." GOP leaders in Washington have been largely silent about the Santos scandal. Brian Mann, NPR News.
He was elected to the House in November. It's NPR.
Ang NPR balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. ABL Space Systems confirmed that its RS-1 rocket experienced an anomaly during liftoff from the Kodiak Pacific spaceport yesterday. The rocket shut down prematurely and did not reach orbit. A black plume of smoke was visible from the city of Kodiak, rising from the area near the spaceport complex on Narrow Cape. A spokesperson for ABL said via email that all personnel on the ground at the complex were safe. The company also tweeted, quote, "This is not the outcome we were hoping for today, but one that we were prepared for." They promised additional information when available. ABL said it was going through its anomaly response procedures in coordination with the Pacific Spaceport Complex and the Federal Aviation Administration. This would have been ABL's first successful launch of its RS-1 rocket. The company has been trying to launch from the Kodiak Pacific Spaceport Complex since fall. Six F-22 fighter jets out of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson are back home after 4 months of flying patrols with NATO allies in Central Europe. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, two of the jets made an unplanned stop in Whitehorse on the way home. The National Park Service has...
J-Bear officials confirmed Tuesday that the six F-22 Raptors were deployed in August to an airbase in Poland, where they took part in a so-called shielding mission to help train Allied air forces and assist them in keeping the war in Ukraine from spilling over into NATO territory. A J-Bear spokesperson said in written responses to questions that, quote, "The F-22s and personnel from J-Bear returned prior to the holidays after completing their deployed assignment in Europe," unquote. The spokesperson said the F-22s were with the 3rd Wing's 90th Expeditionary Fighter Squadron and were accompanied by members of the 673rd Air Base Wing. The pilots and air crews forward deployed from Lask Air Force Base in Poland to Norway, the Netherlands, and Greece to protect NATO allies from air and missile threats. The mission apparently went well until the last leg of the trip back to Alaska, when one of the F-22s developed an engine problem and made an emergency landing at the Erik Nielsen Whitehorse International Airport.
I live on the flight path, about 5 miles back from the end of the runway in Whitehorse, and I heard two jets go over.
Simon Blakesley is an aviation photographer and Canadian Air Force veteran who was editing photos on the evening of December 13th when the F-22s arrived.
I knew that they weren't one of our aircraft. It wasn't a 737. It wasn't an Air Canada aircraft. It was two fighters going over very quickly.
Blakesley said in an interview Tuesday that he assumed they were Canadian Air Force CF-18 Hornets that have set down on occasion at the Whitehorse Airport in recent years. So he went there the next day to snap a few photos of the fighters.
And as I pulled up to the airport, to one of my photography vantage points, I thought, no, those are F-22 Raptors. So I was totally surprised that they were here.
It was the first time that the advanced so-called fifth-generation fighters had landed at Whitehorse. Blakesley said it was a treat for him and other local aviation buffs. He says they were even more excited a few days later to see a big cargo plane from J-Bear fly in.
United States Air Force C-17 arrived here with equipment, maintenance crews, etc.
It's a pretty rare occurrence. And these two F-22s that landed.
Whitehorse Daily Star reporter Ethan Lycan Lang covered the U.S. plane's unscheduled visit, but he said Tuesday that the response of most area residents was more low-key.
It didn't make a huge impression on the general public, but I did get a little bit of response from people in the aviation community.
Blakesley said that's to be expected. He says most Yukoners, like Alaskans, share a strong interest in aviation because we depend on aircraft to get around the vast expanses of the far north.
There are certainly a number of people in Whitehorse, and similar, I think, to the Canadian north and in Alaska, you know, where aviation takes on a particular prominence in our lives, either from transportation of goods, people, float planes, etc.
Blakesley said he was proud that the local aviation community was able to help the Americans fix the problem and get back home in time for Christmas. A J-Bear spokesperson said the Air Force appreciates the help and added that the Canadians' support was, quote, "nothing short of outstanding." In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The National Park Service has awarded a contract to build a bridge over a slumping section of the road into Denali National Park. Park Superintendent Brooke Merrill says the contract awarded to Granite Construction is to span a landslide caused by melting rock glacier at Mile 45 in an area known as Pretty Rocks.
Completing the design of and the construction of the bridge at Pretty Rocks. We are kicking it off in a couple weeks here at the end of January, and we expect boots to be on the ground in late spring, early summer, as soon as the site is accessible.
Federal disaster relief money included in an appropriations package passed by Congress last month will supplement earlier approved federal funds for the Pretty Rocks Bridge. The contract sets the maximum cost at $102.5 million, but Merrill says the actual price tag is expected to come in lower.
We should be able to find cost-saving measures as we work together to develop the final design.
Merrill says the bridge is scheduled to be completed in May 2025. In the meantime, the 92-mile Park Road will remain closed at Mile 43, where it was shut down in August 2021 due to increasing slide activity. Alaska Division of Public Assistance Director Shonda O'Brien is no longer at her post. A voicemail message on O'Brien's state cell phone Monday directed callers to the deputy director.
You've reached the voicemail for the director of the Division of Public Assistance. This position is vacant.
State officials declined an interview but said O'Brien, quote, left state service on Monday. The news comes as the division has been under fire for its failure to issue food stamps and Medicaid benefits in a timely manner. In December, KTOO reported that thousands of Alaskans had been waiting months for their benefits. State Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg blamed the backlog on last year's cyber attack and a recent surge of paperwork. But sources in the division told KTOO there were long-standing problems in the department, including chronic understaffing. In an email to the Department of Health staff, Hedberg thanked O'Brien for her decades of work for the state. A professional skier came to speak with Juneau kids last week. Her visit was a part of an effort to remove some of the barriers that face Alaskan Native youth who want to ski. KTOO's Yvonne Crumrie has more.
Ellen Bradley is a professional skier, but a trip to Eagle Crest last winter was the first time she'd ever skied in Tlingit Ani, her traditional homelands. Now she's working to help Alaska Native youth get everything out of skiing that she does.
I think spending time on the land can address so many things in a person's life, but I think mental health is especially one of them, to just move your body with the land in this winter time, you know.
At the event, they're giving away prizes like a form-line snowboard designed by Tlingit artist James Johnson. There's live music by Southeast Alaska favorite Yatsin. Bradley learned to ski from her dad as a young child in Washington State. She says it helped her feel connected to the land, but she didn't see many other Indigenous people on the slopes while she was growing up.
Like, I had my brother and I had my dad, and everyone else I skied with was white.
She says the sport can seem off limits, even to people who are Indigenous to the land a mountain sits on. Benson Bullock is helping kids sign up for ski trips with the Douglas Indian Association.
So last year, we got together and my supervisor said I should figure out a way to take kids up to Eagle Crest in March and April and get them lessons, get them gear, just get kids out on the mountain.
This year, he wants the program to get even more kids on the mountain. Bradley thinks that efforts to get kids in skis could mean more Indigenous people in the skiing industry as a whole.
So they can become the professional skiers, so they can become the ski instructors, the lifties, so they can eventually become the people running Eagle Crest.
Ryland Tompkins, one of dozens of kids at the event, could be one of the future pros Bradley is thinking of.
What makes it exciting?
I like snow.
He hasn't skied or boarded yet, but his uncle Joe Tompkins is a Paralympic ski champion. Ryland says he wants to learn too. Bradley is hopeful that more and more Indigenous kids will start participating in snow sports.
I think the future of skiing in Alaska is Indigenous.
For Eagle Crest, that future is hitting the slopes in just a few weeks. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumrie.
Alaska Natives are mourning the loss of a North Slope leader who grew up running sled dog teams to collect firewood along the Arctic coast. and came of age in the time of snow machines, borough governments, and native corporations. Oliver Levitt died Sunday at the age of 79. KNBA's Rhonda McBride looks at his life and legacy.
Oliver Levitt was a whaling captain and a cultural beacon for his people, fluent in Inupiaq, and known for his ability to make skin whaling boats without a blueprint.
Without a piece of paper in your hand to go from dimensional wood, hardwoods, and end up with a whaling boat is a skill.
Richard Glenn says Levitt was his mentor at the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, where they served together on the board and in management roles. Glenn says he admired Levitt for his ability to fight for the region and to move comfortably from the boardroom to the whaling camp to the halls of Washington, D.C.
He was adept at it. He made it effortless. He has a diplomat skill, but he also has a hard-won nuts and bolts kind of education.
An education Levitt used to help turn ASRC into Alaska's largest private company.
Well, we've known each other for, I think, over 50 years.
Willie Hensley, a leader in Alaska's native land claims fight, first met Oliver Levitt when he got out of the Army, and it was then, he said, that Levitt dedicated himself to a life of public service, working to form a new borough, teaming up with other leaders to turn ASRC into a company that today earns billions in revenues every year.
He was persistent, and in order to do the things that he had to do, he had to work hard. He practically camped in Washington, D.C.
Hensley says one of Levitt's biggest accomplishments was his battle to help the North Slope Borough gain access to a gas field controlled by the U.S. Navy. This enabled the borough to bring heat and power to the region. Although Hensley was from Kotzebue, a community on the northwest coast of Alaska, he says the two men bonded over their upbringing, growing up in a time when there were no modern amenities, just lots of hard work.
The reason we're good friends is because I understood exactly what he was saying.
Hensley says Levitt was passionate about improving life in the Arctic, and although the two didn't always agree on how to do this, their friendship endured. Hensley was at Levitt's side to offer comfort when he died in his home village of Utqiagvik, surrounded by loved ones. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Traditional Filipino folk dance and music classes are returning to Ketchikan this spring. The classes are part of a Ketchikan Wellness Coalition program aimed at promoting health and cultural heritage in the Filipino community. KRBD's Reagan Miller has more about the program and the kinds of classes that dancers remember in Ketchikan years ago.
Growing up in Ketchikan, Lynn Buendia McClendon's parents put her in traditional dance classes when she was around 8 years old.
We did it for festivals, and we did parties, and we did it for the cruise ships.
She remembers tinikling, a dance performed with bamboo sticks. She says the bamboo poles represented herons, and the dancers represented how the birds would walk through nature.
There's also a candle dance, and I don't remember exclusively what the candle dance was supposed to represent, but we all had candles that we held in our hands, and it was all, that one was all women. The tinikling was usually co-ed, so it was boys and girls, and it was usually pairs, so like my brother's dance, my cousin's dance.
And for the younger dancers, there was the coconut dance.
They do that with coconut shells. They were always laughing and having fun.
But right now, there isn't a public place in Ketchikan for adults and kids to learn these types of traditions. The Filipino Community Center closed its doors in 2015. That's why the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition applied for a grant from the Alaska Community Foundation. The grant will allow the organization to start at Mugseyawan Ketchikan, a series of traditional folk dance and music classes with dedicated instructors. The classes will start this spring for adults and children alike. For the next generation, it's a doubly important step towards connecting with culture. McClendon lives with her children in California now and hopes they'll one day be able to learn the same dances she did growing up in Ketchikan.
I really treasure and like those memories and that we were part of that, and now my kids are starting to ask questions, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to pick it up and be able to pass it on to their kids.
Gina Kaplan took up traditional Filipino folk dance when she was in elementary school. Her parents moved to Ketchikan from the Philippines and signed her up to learn.
When my parents had introduced it to us, saying, hey, it's really important that you learn kind of the cultural dance of, like, where we came from and trying to pass along traditional dance. And, you know, as a child, you're like, oh, great, we're being forced into, like, entertaining our parents.
She now lives in Oregon, but looking back, Kaplan is grateful for the chance. She's still friends with many of the others who took the classes with her over four decades ago.
I think about those days on a weekend when we as a community would gather, and it would always be potluck style, and you would have all kinds of traditional Filipino foods brought on to a point where it was like an event, a fun event that as kids that we look forward to being able to see each other and convene and celebrate, you know.
She hopes that the classes will be a way for younger Filipino people in Ketchikan to connect with their roots.
We've got like first, second, third generation born in the U.S. who have not really had a connection to, you know, the Philippines and kind of their way of life and tradition and culture.
Ketchikan Wellness Coalition staff expect that the classes will start up in May and run through October, when there will be a final showcase leading up to the community's Phil-Am Festival. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
A computer system failure wreaks havoc with air travel. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. An outage of a safety information system at the Federal Aviation Administration led to a nationwide grounding of flight departures this morning. By the time the FAA lifted its ground order, hundreds of flights were canceled and thousands more were delayed. A new report says limits imposed on Russian crude oil exports are not strong enough to significantly dent the country's finances. An environmental research group says Russia is still bringing in nearly $700 million a day from fossil fuel sales. South Korean solar panel maker Qcells is investing more than $2.5 billion to build factories in the U.S. They'll be located in Georgia and could employ some 2,500 people. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 11th day of January, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:46. It will set again at 4:49. That will give us 7 hours and 3 minutes of glorious daylight. A gain of 2 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 50 degrees. That was set in 2012. And our record low was minus 1, set in 1932. Currently 33 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Looks more like mostly cloudy skies. They have calm winds out at the airport and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is still calling for mostly sunny skies, but it looks like the mostly cloudy skies predicted for this evening have arrived a little early. They're looking for a low of 31 overnight tonight, with light and variable winds turning to the northeast to 10 after midnight. For tomorrow, look for a chance of snow before 10 a.m., then a chance of rain after that. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, too, with a high near 39, northeast winds to 10, turning to the northwest tomorrow morning. And rain is likely starting Thursday night, and running through Monday night. Looking at our local tides, we have a incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 4:06 this afternoon and be 8 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:43 p.m. of 2/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:39 this afternoon and be 12.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:12 this evening of 5/10 in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory for tonight. Variable 10 today, seas to 7 feet. Northeast 10 tonight, seas to 8 feet. And northeast 15 tomorrow, seas to 7 feet. Coming up to northeast 25 tomorrow night, seas coming up to 10 feet tomorrow night. Over on the west side, small craft advisory for Thursday. Variable 10 today in the Shelikof with seas to 3 feet. Variable 10 tonight with seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 15 increasing to 25 tomorrow afternoon. Seas 3 feet building to 5 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Thursday night, northeast 25, seas to 7 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Wednesday, January 11th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m., and on Thursday, January 12th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. The Assembly and City Council joint work session is scheduled for Wednesday, January 18th. Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live stream notifications. The Aleutic Museum is renovating its gallery. Join them tonight between 5:30 and 7 p.m. at the museum for their second community conversation to share your ideas for their exhibits. It will be facilitated by Sarah Asper Smith of Exhibit AK, and it's an opportunity for you to provide input. Come help them envision future exhibits. It's free and open to the public, and again, starts at 5:30 at the Aleutic Museum tonight. Generously sponsored by CONIAG and the Institute for Museum and Library Sciences. Galley Tables is coming up on Friday, and they are looking for some storytellers for this month. The theme is Tried and True or Shiny and New. If you have a story to tell, you can sign up at galleytables.com or send them an email to galleytables@gmail.com. Commercial fishing vessels participating in the 2023 Tanner crab fishery, the Coast Guard would like to remind you to consider the stability of your vessel when loading crab pots. Stacking the pots changes the center of gravity, and that affects the stability, especially in icing conditions. A vessel with 6 inches or less of freeboard at amidships may be operating in an especially hazardous condition. Personnel from the Coast Guard Safety Office in Kodiak will be walking the docks providing voluntary safety compliance checks with an emphasis on stability. You can contact them at 907-486-5918 or stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have any questions. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting tomorrow, January 12th. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are encouraged to also tune in here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will be web-streamed as well, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the City Clerk's Office at 907-486-8636. Coming up at the Kodiak Public Library on Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., the library will be having a Chinese calligraphy craft. Learn how to make the symbol of good luck for the Chinese New Year. Supplies will be provided by the library. Again, that's this Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., Chinese calligraphy. Library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesdays through Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Kodiak Public Library will be closed next Monday, January 16th, for the Martin Luther King Jr. Day. If you have any questions about any of their programs, call the Kodiak Public Library at 907-486-8686. There will be classes available at the Kodiak College coming up, including the Introduction to Pickleball. The instructor will be Jesse Mickelson. Cost is $75, and it goes from January 19th through February 9th. It will be four Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. and in person. They're also doing Drawing Without Perfection. Bonnie Dillard is going to instruct that class. That cost is $110. That will be going from January 28th to February 18th during four Saturdays from 4:30 to 6 p.m. If you would like to sign up for these classes or have any questions, go to the Kodiak College website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.